Good morning, everyone. Today's daf in Yevamos daf Sadi Dalid. Find ourselves back on Sadi Beis. I'm at Beis, and today we have a big topic to cover. Davar Shelo Bala Olam, which we'll get to in just a moment. Thank the Lubin Foundation for sponsorship of the daf. Tafel Bilona Zechen Ishmael Zol Subin Zaltzman. Gemara yesterday delved into a discussion of Yevama Lashuk, a woman who is a Yevama. She is her husband died. She's awaiting Yibum by her brother-in-law. Is she allowed to marry somebody else? The answer, of course, is no. That's an issur in the Torah. It's a lav. It's a negative prohibition. The Torah says, "Lo siya eish zamesa chutzish zar." A woman cannot go to be with another man. The word "lo" indicates that it's a lav. It's a negative prohibition. Generally speaking, on negative prohibitions, there's a tfisus kedushin. So that's a machlokus between the Tanakam and Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva says there is no tfisus kedushin, and as a result, according to Rabbi Akiva, the child is going to be a mamzer. But the Chachamim say that there's going to be tfisus kedushin. The Gemara has the discussion. A debate over here by a Yevama Lashuk, even though it's a lav, it could very well be that this may be an exception to the rule. The rule is that there is no the rule is that there is Tfisus Kedushin by Chai V'Lavin. Again, we don't pass like Rabbi Akiva. So that's the rule. And this may be an exception. Why should this be the exception? So that was the machlokes between Rav and Shmuel that we saw yesterday. Rav says that there is no tfisus kedushin by Yevama Lashuk, and the reason why is because of the pasuk. The Torah says, Lo siya eishas ameisa chutza lishdar, and according to Rav, what the Torah is describing is a reality, meaning that there's a halachic reality that there's no havaya, that there simply is no kedushin between a Yevama and anyone other than her Yevam. That's Rav's understanding of the pasuk. Shmuel, you remember yesterday, he had a great lashon. He says, we're poor, we're impoverished. Meaning we don't really know what the correct pshat in the pasuk is. It could be that Rav is right. It could be that the Torah is describing a halachic reality, or it could very well be that the Torah just simply says it's a lav. It's a negative prohibition. But if one wants to violate the negative prohibition, we have Bechira Chashi, we have free choice. A person can violate the negative prohibition, and there would be Tfisus Kedushin. Where does the halacha stand on this issue? So the Gemara brought in a major debate amongst the later Amoraim as to what exactly is the story if a Yevama accepts Kedushin from another man. Is there Tfisus Kedushin? Is there no Tfisus Kedushin? So the Gemara brought down a machlokas, whether we go like Rav or whether we go like Shmuel.
What other penalties she has besides this? Besides the condition is gone.
Mm-hmm.
But what other penalties
she
should have?
Meaning? Yeah, in other words, right. Correct. In other words, if it's a regular lav in the Torah, so you get malchus. Okay. Fine. That was the discussion we had yesterday. Okay, I'm Rav Yanai. We'll pick it up towards the bottom of Tzadi Beis Amid Beis, the Gemara's continuation. I'm Rav Yanai bechabur nimnu begamra in kedushin tofsim biyavama. So we had a chabur, we had a group, we brought it to a vote, and the vote was is that kedushin is not tofis by yavama. In other words, we went like Rav. In other words, the decision was to go to Paschal like Rav. Amalei Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi lo mishnah stenu hizu. So Rabbi Yochanan says, what do you mean? It's a Mishnah. Meaning, I knew that all along. That the halacha, in fact, follows like Rav, and that that there is no tfisus kedushin by Yevam Lashuk. And the reason why I know that is because of a Mishnah. Mishnah and kedushin, it goes as follows. Hamar Leisha Hariat Mekudeshes Li LaAchesh Es Gayer. So a man says to a woman, "Look, I want to be Mekadesh you, but there's a couple of things holding us back from Kedushin. Notably, I'm not Jewish, or notably, you're not Jewish." So he says, "Okay, no problem at all. So let's do the following now. Let's make the transaction right now. I say transaction. I mean, I'm obviously, we're talking about marriage over here. It'd be nicer if I spoke in nicer terms about it, but." Let's just right now just learn the Mishnah. So Hare An Mekudeshesli, so the man accepts Kedushin from a woman, or not accepts, I mean he's giving her Kedushin, right? The Hare An Mekudeshesli, Achashes Gayir. Now let's do the transaction right now. Obviously the fact of the matter is I'm not Jewish. Fine. So what we'll do is we'll do the act now, and the chalos and the effect will take place when in fact I convert. Or La'achashesgayir. Either my conversion is holding us back from the marriage, or your conversion is holding us back from the marriage. Either way, the man hands the kesef kedushin to the woman and says, "Look, we'll do the act now, and the chalos will take place later." Or let's say he's a slave or she's a slave, and again, they're going to do the affected kedushin now, and when the emancipation comes at a later point in time, the effect will take a place. Or let's say like this. In other words, right now you're married. that's going to be a bit of a wrench in our marriage right now. Is that you're already a married woman, but no problem at all. I'll give you the kesef of kedushin right now, and then when your husband dies, so then the chalos will take place. Okay, talk about advanced planning. Okay, the person's really he's got his life planned out for him. Or alacher shatamos achosech. Or look, I'd love to marry you, but the problem is I'm married to your sister. So look, in the event that your sister happens to die, so let the marriage take effect. Or la'acher shiachlos lech yivimech, or let's say after chalitza is done, eina mikudeshes. In these cases, the kedushin is not going to be chal. So, what was the last example that was given in that Mishnah in Kedushin? It says in the Mishnah that here I'm going to give you the kesef of Kedushin, and right now the problem is that you have a Zika, you are bound to your Yavam. Okay, good. So I'll give you the money now, and then after Chalitza there'll be a Chalos, there'll be the effect will take place. In all these cases, says the Mishnah in Kedushin, Einam Kedushin, the Kedushin is not a good Kedushin. What do you see? You see from that last case in the Mishnah that there's no Chalos on a Yavam Lashuk. Right. Good. That's the Mishnah in Kedushin. Amar Lei, so he says to him, Ilav de Dale la Chaspa mi Mishkacha Marganisa Tuse. So he says, look, if I didn't pick up that piece of shard off the ground, you wouldn't have found a pearl underneath it. In other words, and this plagues us all the time with hindsight bias, meaning we knew it all along. Yeah, we knew it all along. After we were told the information, then everything becomes clear to us, right? Whenever we look backwards, we say, "Oh, I knew that." No, you didn't know that at the time. Right now that I gave you the information, right? You do this with games all the time, right? I knew that team was going to win. You didn't know that. If you knew that, you would have placed a wager. But no, the only reason why you saw the Mishnah Kedushin and it opened your eyes is because I told you that there's no Kedushin by Yavam Lashuk. But anyway, that aside, Rav Yochanan sees a Mishnah in Kedushin, and the Mishnah Kedushin seems to be pretty clear that there is no Tfisas Kedushin by Yavam Lashuk, like Rav says. Okay, wonderful. Amalei Reish Lakish. So Reish Lakish says, he says to his brother-in-law, I'm not so sure you're right. That Mishnah Kedushin is not absolute proof that you are correct. Why? So Elav de Kalsa Gavarachba Rabba Chava Minalachana Masis and Rabbi Kivahi. I could have said a very simple pshat in that Mishnah, and that is that the Mishnah is going like Rabbi Kiva, Damar Ein Kedushin Tovzim Bechai Velavin. Well, it's true. The Mishnah says that there is no Kedushin that's Tofes on a Yavam Lashok. That part's true. But I'll tell you what also is true. You don't know who the author of that Mishnah is. I can make a very simple argument. The author of that Mishnah is Rabbi Kiva. What does Rabbi Kiva hold throughout Shas? Ein Kedushin Tovzim Bechai Velavin. So if that's true, so now you don't have a proof anymore. We were arguing about Yavam Lashuk, not according to Rabbi Akiva. Meaning, according to Rabbi Akiva, it's pashut that Yavam Lashuk, there's no Tfisas Kedushin, because he says that by any love. We're arguing about what the Chachamim would say about Yavam Lashuk. So so that's what Reish Lakish says in his defense. Not his defense, but an attack on Rav Yochanan. So, Damar in Kedushin Tovzim, Mechai Velamvi, Rabbi Akiva, Ki Amar La, La'achah She'achlos Le'yivimech, Litfese Ba Kedushay, Dahasha Min Le'le Rabbi Akiva, Damar Adam Makna Davish Lo Ba La'olam. So the Gemara says, slow down. If you think that mission is going like Rabbi Akiva, so then I'm going to attack you from a totally different angle. And that is the following. What's the basic point of that Mishnah? Basic point of that Mishnah is in your current state right now, there can be no marriage. Right? The cases in the Mishnah were, I'm not Jewish yet, you're not Jewish yet, I'm a slave, you're a slave. So look, let's just plan ahead. Right? I'm married to your sister. Okay, right now we can't get married. But let's plan a little bit of ahead. I'll give you the money now, and the chalos and the effect of that money will take place when I'm available and you're available. And the point the Mishnah is making is it doesn't work. Right? And the Gemara is now suggesting, well, maybe that Mishnah is going like Rabbi Akiva. Gemara says, interesting. If the Mishnah is going like Rabbi Akiva, like you'd like to argue, Reish Lakish, well, did you know that according to Rabbi Akiva, a person can make a transaction on something that is not yet in this world? This is a topic of Darvish Alo Bala Olam. A major debate amongst the Tanaim, amongst the Amoraim, whether or not a person can make a kinyan and make an effect, a transaction, on something that is not yet here. It happens to be that the opinion of Rabbi Akiva is that Adam Makne Davar Shelo Bala Olam. A person can make a kinyan on something that doesn't yet exist in this world. So if you're looking at that Mishnah in Kiddushin, and you're saying that that Mishnah is going like Rabbi Akiva, so then you painted yourself in a corner. Because Rabbi Akiva would say, look, I understand in a present state right now, there cannot be, there's no Chalos Kedushin. Good. But when she becomes available, it should work. And yet that Mishnah, the way the Mishnah sounds, is that under no circumstance is that Kedushin going to take effect. Not now, not later. That's what the Mishnah sounds like. So how can you tell me that that Mishnah is going like Rabbi Akiva when Rabbi Akiva does allow for the exchange for the transaction of futures? And the Gemara goes on to explain, and how do we know that Rabbi Akiva subscribes to this viewpoint? Ditnan. We learned in the following Mishnah, we're on Sadi Gimel and Aleph, top. Konim Shani Oselaficha, a husband and wife are married, and she had enough with him, and she says to her husband, look, here's the story. Anything I prepare will be usher to you. In other words, she makes a neder. Koneim shani osa laficha. Right? Anything I prepare for your mouth. The word koneim, we're going to see that when we get to nedarim, which is in Seder Nashim, we're going to see that term again and again and again. It's a kinui, it's an expression. It basically means that everything I make will be like a karban to you. Wait, 1 second. So, koneim shani osa laficha. Ain't sarich lahafir. Now, Danny, you're right, but the Mishnah's point is even one step more. You don't even need hafara. Why don't you need hafara? So, if you take a look at the second Rashi on the page, dekem and dekam shabdale lamaisi adel lo matzian lo sorry lo matzian and nedara. She can't make a neder on something which is already an obligation to her husband. Meaning, one of the tonight suva is that her earnings are going to go to her husband. She anything she earns is by definition going to go to her husband. She's making a neder on something that she's already bound to. She can't do that.
Why would even she bother to do it? Because she can annul it.
But the Mishnah's point is that...
Get back to the husband.
Understood. The Mishnah's point is that you don't even need annulment because her neder doesn't even take effect to begin with. That's the Chiddush of the Mishnah. So, Ein Tzarich LaHafir. Good. That is the opinion of the Tanna Kamma. Rabbi Kiva Omer Yafir. Rabbi Kiva says, no, he should do Hafara. In other words, he could do Hafara and he should do Hafara. Why? Shema Tadif Alav Yosem and Arayilo. Because she's obligated for a Maisa Yadayim to go to her husband. That part's true. But we also know that there is a cap. In other words, there is an agreed to amount in terms of how much exactly she needs to work and give to him. If she goes above and beyond that, so then that remains by her. In other words, if she works extra hard and she makes a little bit extra, so that she's allowed to keep. So her neder obviously will not affect her shibud, that which she's bound to do for him and earn for him, but anything above and above that, the hadafa is in fact hers. And so therefore, he needs to be made for that neder, for those things that she will make that goes above and beyond. That is the opinion of Rabbi Akiva. What do you see from Rabbi Akiva? That neder that she made is going on something that's currently here? No. The neder she's making is on a future, on her earnings that she will earn in the future. How can a neder have an effect on something that doesn't exist right now, but will exist in the future? So the Gemara says, I'll tell you how. Because according to Rabbi Akiva, Adam Makna Davar Shelo Bala Olam, a person can make in this case, not a transaction, but a neder on something that doesn't exist in this world, but it's all the same idea. It's on a future. So the Gemara says, so what are you going to do? Meaning, how going all the way back now to the Mishnah and Kedushin, how did you understand the Mishnah and Kedushin? That's going like Rabbi Akiva. If it's going like Rabbi Akiva, you can make a transaction in the future. The Gemara says, Hayit Marlam, Ravuna, Bereid Rav Yeshua, Baomer Zikachula Yedai Le'oseihem. So the Gemara says, no. That Mishnah in Nedarim could be understood in the following. She wasn't making an eder on the future earnings, meaning on the product that she will make, but rather her neder was going on her hands. The creator of those earnings. That is what she's making a neder on. So the yadayim, the hands, the kashi yadayim lo'oseihem, the yadayim is nuba'alma. So the yadayim are something that's there in the world right now. The neder is not going on what the hands are producing, but the actual hands themselves. It's kind of like, if we can give an analogy, it's like, in other words, the fruit produced by a tree. you can't make a neder or have any type of chalos change the effect of a fruit that's not yet in this world. That's the davar shel habal olam. But if your neder goes on the tree, which produces the fruit, so then the fruit that it yields is going to be prohibited. So same thing over here. It's not, the analogy is not perfect, but you get the basic idea. In other words, her neder is not going on that which she produces, but on her hands. So on her hands, which are now going to be also to her husband, anything that those hands produce are also going to be also to her husband as well. And therefore, if that's the way we're going to understand the Mishnah Nedarim, so maybe Rabbi Kiva doesn't necessarily subscribe to this rule of Adamak and Davar shel habal olam, and therefore maybe Rav Yochanan is right in this way he understands the Mishnah Kedushin.
So in the first argument of Rabbi Akiva, saying that she is supposed to give everything to her husband, that if she makes it extra, what is the definition that
The Gemara Rashi quotes, I didn't quote it, Rashi quotes the Gemara Ksuvas. Gemara Ksuvas is going to go through all these, the exact numbers, the quantity of how much she's obligated and what's extra. We will see that later on together.
So she can't do anything with her hands for her husband? She can't do
correct. Nothing. Nothing. Absolutely nothing. If her neder is chal. Okay. Upligi de Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak. Now the Gemara says good. So we have now suggested that Rabbi Akiva holds that in Adam Davar Machna Davar Shel Habal Olam, but the Gemara is going to point out now that Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak is going to be in total disagreement, and he's going to say that Rabbi Akiva does hold Adam Machna Davar Shel Habal Olam, that you can make a transaction on a future. Okay, and for the rest of this Amud, and really almost the entire Daf, we're going to be discussing this topic of Davar Shel Habal Olam. Again, making a transaction in the future, we're going to see example after example where we're going to see Tanaim who do subscribe to this principle, and you know how this works generally. If we're collecting a group of Tanaim and Amoraim, this group will be Tanaim and Amoraim. If we're collecting a group of Tanaim and Amoraim who hold that Adam Machna Davar Shel Habal Olam, that means that they're the exceptions, meaning they are all from the same general thought process, but the consensus generally goes the other way, meaning that generally speaking, ain't Adam Machna Davar Shel Habal Olam. So, but let's introduce ourselves to the Tanaim who do say Adam Machna Davar Shel Habal Olam, and that is they are a total of eight Tanaim. Rav Huna Karav, Rav Karebi Yanai, Rabbi Yanai Karebi Chia, Rabbi Chia Karebi, Rabbi Karebi Meir, Rabbi Meir Karebi Elazar ben Yaakov, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov Karebi Akiva. What it also does, by the way, for us is it treats us to a great opportunity to look at Rabbi Talmud, going from the Amor Rav Huna all the way to the Tana Rabbi Akiva. Right, Rav Huna was a student of Rav. We see that time and again throughout Shas. Rav was a student of Rabbi Yanai. I'm not sure if we see that all the time. That Rav, in other words, we do see the Rav learned by Rabbi Chia. We see that Rav learned by Rabbi. Rabbi Yanai, off the top of my head, I can't think of it, but that doesn't mean anything. It just means off the top of my head. The Rabbi Yana is like Rabbi Chia. Rabbi Chia is like Rabbi. That we see throughout Shas. Rabbi is like Rabbi Meir, meaning Rabbi was a student of Rabbi Meir. We see that all the time. Stam Mishnah ke Rabbi Meir. Right? We hear that all the time in the Gemara. That an anonymous Mishnah is going like Rabbi Meir. Who is the editor of the Mishnayos? Rabbi Yehuda Anasi. Right? It makes perfect sense. And Rabbi Meir is like Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, and Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov is a student of Rabbi Akiva. It is interesting to note that we learned earlier in the Masechta that when Rabbi Akiva started all over again, right? In other words, he lost the 24,000 Talmidim and he started all over again. So one of his students was Rabbi Meir. Okay. Now, I don't think it was Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. Or was it? Okay. Good. So it was. It was one of his students. Okay, good. Oh, good. Anyway, so there are now a total of eight Amoraim and Tanaim, all subscribing to this principle, Damar Da'adam Machna Davar Shel Habal Olam, that a person can make a transaction on a future. Okay, and here we go now, step by step. So we're going to cite every one of them and their respective position, which clearly demonstrates that they subscribe to this idea of Adam Machna Davar Shel Habal Olam. We start with Rav Huna. Right, we're going from the later generation to the earlier generation. We're working backwards. Rav Huna Ma'i did Mar Mocha Peres Dekol HaChavero. A person sells the fruit of his palm tree to his friend. I'm Rav Huna Shel Habal Olam Yachol Lachzer Bo Mishabal Olam Ein Yachol Lachzer Bo. So Rav Huna is of the opinion that as long as they're not here yet, so you can have a retraction. In other words, you can void the sale. But once they arrived in this world, so Ein Yachol Lachzer Bo, you cannot retract. You cannot void the sale because once they're here, so that's it. They take effect. And Rav Nachman says, "What do you mean? Even after they've arrived, you could still have chazara. You could still recant and renege on your agreement." I understand. Did you make a transaction earlier? Rav Nachman obviously disagrees with Rav Huna. Rav Nachman says that the fact that there was a transaction that was made earlier, but if the fruit are not yet in this world, that's not a transaction. And so therefore, all it is basically just a, it's like an agreement in terms. It's like, in principle, I like the idea of selling it to you, but you didn't actually make a sale. That's according to Rav Nachman. Rav Huna, who subscribes to this principle of Alda Machna Davar Shelo Bala Olam, he says that the transaction is very well good. I'm Rav Nachman Modina Di Shamit Va'achel Lo Mafkina Minei. Rav Nachman says, here's the only area where I will agree with you. Rav Nachman says to Rav Huna, and that is that if after I gave you the money, even though the fruit haven't come into the world yet, and after the fruit have come, and after I take one, then I don't have to. You can't demand for me payment for that fruit which I took, because at that point in time, the fact that I took it is indicative, and you allowed me to take it is indicative of the fact that you were in agreement to the original transaction. But that's the only place where I'm going to agree with you. But in principle, Rav Nachman says to Rav Huna, I disagree with you. Okay, so we see that Rav Huna subscribes to this principle of a person can make a kinyan on something that's not yet in this world, regarding the example of the palm tree. Next, Rav Damar, Rav Huna, Amar Rav. The Gemara here quotes Rav Huna, Amar Rav. It's funny, the Gemara is now trying to show us where Rav says and who says it in the name of Rav. It's Rav Huna, Amar Rav, which we already established that Rav Huna subscribes to that principle, but good. Basically, you flip a contract. So, and you don't even have the contract yet in your hand to flip. So in other words, I'm going to buy a property, and you say to your friend, look, I'm going to, in this particular case, I'm going to give it to you. Okay, give it to you, sell it to you. In other words, you're going to make a transaction with a property that you don't yet even own. The halacha is, and they make the kinyan right now, even though he doesn't even have the title yet in his hand. The halach is, it works, it's kona. It is in fact a kinyan. Why? Because again, Rav subscribes to the principle that adam makna davar shelo bala olam. So that is Rav. Now we're up to Rabbi Yannai. Rabbi Yannai, Rabbi Chia, Rabbi Yannai, Havalei Arisa, Davim Aisalei Kitna, Deperi Komali Shabasta. Rabbi Yannai had delivered to him a basket of fruit on Erev Shabbos. His Arisa. His Arisa is a sharecropper, right? The sharecroppers back then, so they would work the field and they would take percentage for themselves as their payment, and then the owner, they would give the rest of the fruit. So here you had a sharecropper, and the sharecropper every Erev Shabbos would drop the basket of fruit off in front of Rabbi Yannai, and Hauyuma Nagalei Velo Asa. Now there was one particular Erev Shabbos, and the sharecropper didn't come in with the fruit, and Rabbi Yannai was worried. He was nervous. So Shakal Eser mi pera de besa, Ailu Aisala Kami de Rav, I'm sorry, Alayhu. And so what he did is he took 10 fruits from his own house and he took off Trumos or Maestros on the basket of fruit that have not yet arrived. So what he was doing is he was taking off Trumos or Maestros on fruit that are not yet in his possession. That is Makna Davar, that's Makna Adam Davar Shelo Bala Olam. That's a perfect illustration of creating a kinyan on something that's not yet in this world. Now the kinyan is changing the status of the produce from being tevel to being mitukan. It's now totally corrected. But give me a moment. We're gonna discuss where the fruit may have been. So the Gemara says, "Also coming to Rabbi Chia, I'm really shopping about it." So he went to Rabbi Chia and he said, "Is it good what I did? I took off Trumas and Maestros, even though the fruit is not yet my possession." And Rabbi Chia said, "You did great, Ditanya. You're going to fear HaKadosh Baruch Hu every day. Every day, including Eilu Shabbosos V'Yomim Tovim, including both Shabbos and Yantav." So, it's a funny drasha, right, that you're going to fear HaKadosh Baruch Hu every day, and every day includes Shabbos and Yantav. Lama Hilchasa. Ilei Malasuri Mechel. So the Gemara says, are we talking of taking off Trumas and Maestros and then eating? It's the Rekhola Mishrei Tiltu de Rabbanan. The Gemara says, look, I don't need a pasuk to allow tiltul derabanan. Tiltul derabanan, meaning taking off trumas and maizos on Shabbos, is an issur derabanan. The Torah is not going to address that scenario. El alav ki ay gavna. So it must mean that under these circumstances, one could take off trumas and maizos in order to have onik Shabbos, in order to enjoy the Shabbos. So that's what the that's how we dash on. So pasuk either way. Rabbi Chia says to Rabbi Yannai, you did good by taking off Trumas Maisos on something that you do not yet have in this world. If you take a look at Rashi, Rashi says, going back now just a little bit, right, he was worried that the basket didn't come yet, and he didn't have actual possession of the basket, and so he took off Trumas and Maisos on fruit that are not yet his. Where are the fruit right now? So if you take a look at Rashi, Rashi is not totally clear where the fruit are. If you take a look at Tosfos, Maisi Kinta de Peira.
Why couldn't you say that the
shared
carpet could have been
Zohar Adam? So it could have been, but we're not looking at it from his perspective. We're looking at it from the recipient's perspective.
That he could have acquired it through the guy's
Zohar
Adam, and then he
it could have, but again, you're right, but you're looking at it from his perspective. We're looking at it from the recipient. From his perspective, we don't know. And the Gemara's point is that even though we don't know where it is, nevertheless, he can still make a kinyan. So, Maisa Kinta de Peri Omeri, de Michel Aris Havushayanosin Rabbi Yannai. So, the Gemara, so Tosos over here, see the Bam Tosos? So, according to the Re says that it was right now in the possession of the Aris, meaning the fruit were in the world, it just happens to be that right now it's under the ownership of the sharecropper. If all the sharecropper was doing was just handing something to Rabbi Yannai that already belonged to Rabbi Yannai, so then that's not a davar shel ba'al olam. Just because right now someone else is holding it doesn't mean that you don't have possession of it. And the Gemara and Tosos says, and what about the fact that it was connected to the ground? Tosos says that's not a big deal. Meaning something connected to the ground, it's biyado. It's within your power, meaning that's something that you yourself can pick up. So, and Tosos rejects the idea that it was too far away. Okay, anyway, Tosos says that the reason why this falls under the category of Davar shel ba'al olam is because it was under the ownership of the Aris, who then transferred it to Rabbi Yannai every Erev Shabbos, and on that particular Erev Shabbos, didn't actually transfer. Well, he ballparked it. In other words, right? Not, I don't know about over, but in other words, he got the same amount every Shabbos. Right. By Truma, just in general, you should know, in Truma, there's no amount, and the 2% is a guideline. By Meiser, it's specific. It's 10%, and it's 10% specifically. So, okay. So, Elalav ki agavna. Amrlei. So the continuing in the Gemara, we're still in the same story with Rabbi Yannai and his Rebbe, Rabbi Chia, and the basket and the hafrashas trumas. And the Gemara says, Amrlei v'hai krum b'chama kaneret tzutz. So Rabbi Yannai says, you know, I've been having sleepless nights. Okay, we should have these kinds of sleepless nights where he possibly violated a halacha of making a kinyan on davar shel ba'al olam, and he wasn't sure whether or not on Shabbos he was eating either metukan, either was corrected or it was teva, and it bothered him. And not only did he have a sleepless night, but he had a dream, and in the dream he saw kaneret tzutz. He saw a splintered reed. So my love hachi kamerli. So now back then they knew Tanakh. So when they see kaneret tzutz, when they see a splintered reed, so they're now cataloging in their minds all the pesukim they know in Tanakh. And so he's wondering now, Rabbi Yannai, what pasuk has a kaneret tzutz? Oh, of course, Malachim Beis. That's, of course, that's the first thing that would enter all of our minds, I'm sure. So hinei b'tach l'lach ha-mishanta ha-kaneret tzutz hazeh. So the pasuk in Malachim Beis, right? This is by Chizkiyahu HaMelech, and the king of Asher sent him a reed, a splintered reed, and Melech Asher, Sancheriv Melech Asher, was saying to him, you know, you're gonna look for Egypt for support in terms of defending you. Don't look for Egypt for support. Egypt is not gonna defend you, and it'll be kaneret tzutz. It'll be like a splintered reed. So anyway, he felt like he was doing something inappropriate, and the splintered reed was what tipped him off. So lo hachi kamilach. So Rabbi Chia says to him, "No, you thought of the wrong kane ratzutz. Don't go to Malachim Beis, but rather go to stay for Yeshayahu, of course." So kane ratzutz lo yishboru pishtake lo yichabena. He quotes a different pasuk. The pasuk says that a splinter reed doesn't need to break, and pashta keha, the flax, weak flax, lo yichabena, he doesn't need to whiten it. Anyway, the point is that it's not a negative connotation; it was a positive connotation. And don't worry about your sleepless night. You did good.
Is it okay to do that?
Well, no. Just in. Rabbi Chia and Rabbi Yanai both say it's okay to do that because they subscribe to Adam Akhna Davashallah Balolam. Again, the frame of this entire discussion is, here's a list of Amorim and Tanaim who subscribe to Adam Akhna Davashallah Balolam. And again, like I pointed out, that doesn't mean we subscribe to that. These are all the Tanaim who do. Next, Rabbi. We're up to Rabbi. Okay, so we show that both Rabbi Yanai and Rabbi Chia subscribe to Adam Akhna Davashallah Balolam. So we so far done Rav Huna, Rav, Rabbi Yanai, Rabbi Chia, and now we're up to number five. We're up to Rabbi. The pasuk says, "Lo saskir eved al adonav." A person can't send an eved back to his master. And Rabbi Omer belokech eved amaslo shachero akasam medaber. Rabbi says the Torah is talking about purchasing an eved with the intent of freeing the eved. So if you purchase an eved with the intent of freeing the eved, so you know what you need to do. Like he suggested, you need to free the eved. So hechidami. So what exactly do you? Amar Rav Nachman. It's like the cuss of lay. So here's what you do. You write the following in the contracted document of when you're about to purchase this eved kanani. So keep in mind, you don't own him yet, right? Eved kanani, chattel. You don't own the eved kanani yet, and you purchase him. But in the contract, you're going to write that when, in fact, I do purchase you, I'm also going to free you. So you're making a transaction on something that you don't actually own yet. And Rebbe says, that's fine, you could do that. So, you're going to be freed from this very moment. Okay, so you're making a kinyan on something that's not yet in your possession. Rebbe says, you could do that. Okay, and we're going up the ladder. Number six, Rebbe Meir. Did none. Rabbi Meir Omer Mikudeshes. So here we have a brisa that is identical to the Mishnah that we saw earlier this morning. The only difference, of course, is that in this brisa, there's the opinion of the Tanakhama, and then there's the opinion of Rabbi Meir. And Rabbi Meir says the Kedushin is good, even though right now I'm currently not Jewish. Okay, it's a little bit of a damper in our marriage. But fine, I'm going to give you the Kesef Kedushin now, and when in fact I convert, the Kedushin is going to be Chal. You're not Jewish. I'm a slave. You're a slave. Doesn't matter. In other words, if the money is given now, and the chalos and the effects takes place later when we're available, so good. Rabbi Meir says that works. You don't yet have that possession, meaning you don't have that power yet. That's fine. Adam Akhna Davash Labala Olam. You can make a kinyan on the future. So you see that Rabbi Meir subscribes to it. Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov D'Tanya. We are in the middle of Tzadi Gimel Amud Beis, a second wide line. We're cataloging. So now catalog, and on the topic of Adam Makna Davash Labalolam, we have Rabbi Meir saying that you make a kinyan on the future.
But everything else also, right?
Correct. This is going to be throughout the world of kinyanim. Agreed. Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov D'Tanya. We're up to now Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. The pasuk says yes. I'm the pasuk. The brisa says yes. Okay. Now I'm Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. I feel a mama peres aruga zu tlushim yuhu truma al peres aruga michubarim. I want to take off truma samaisos on a row of fruit that are already detached onto a row of fruit that's not yet detached. Fruit, any produce that's not yet detached, is not subject to Trumas HaMaisros. And so what you're doing is you're taking off Trumas HaMaisros onto fruit that are still connected to the ground, and obviously the chalos, the effect, will take place only later, only after you detach them. Oh, Peres Aruga Mechubar Ma Peres Zir Tulushim Leche Sheyaviu Shlish Veyit Lushu Veyaviu Shlish Venit Lushu Dvarv Kayamim. the what you said is going to in fact be good. Meaning, even though right now there's no chiv, there's no obligation, the chalos only take place later, doesn't matter. If the act of hafrasha is done now, and there's something that will take place later, on the growth and the development that takes place later, it works, according to Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, which the Gemara says falls in line with what we're saying. And Rabbi Akiva did not, and finally, last on the list. And when I say last, I really mean first, generationally. Rabbi Akiva did not, konim shani osel aficha. We go back to the Mishnah Nedarim. Now, I know that Reish Lakish and Rav Yochanan gave a different shot in the Mishnah in Nedarim, but clearly over here, according to Rav Nachman Yitzchak, and that's the whole point of the Gemara, Rav Nachman Yitzchak argues, and he says that this Mishnah Nedarim is not like Reish Lakish learned it, not like Rav Yochanan learned it, but rather, Konim Shani Yosel Fiecha Eino Tzarech La'afir, Rabbi Kiva Omer Yafir, Shematad Yifalav Yosem and Arayilo. So we have the Mishnah where Rabbi Akiva says that if she makes a neder on that which I will make for you, not going on the hands, not like we said earlier, but going on the actual item that she produces for her husband, will have a chalos neder, will be prohibited to her husband, even though it's not here yet. Doesn't matter. It will affect that which will take place in the future. And Rabbi Akiva says, therefore, the husband has to be made for neder, and the husband has to annul the vow. Even though on the base amount that she owes her husband, she can't make a neder, but on the hadaf, on anything above and over, the chalos neder will be chal, and therefore Rabbi Akiva says the husband has to be made for neder. And if the husband is not made for neder, so that means that her neder will take effect on something that will happen in the future. So you see that Rabbi Akiva also subscribes to the rule of ein adam, I'm sorry, that not ein, that you can make a transaction in the future. So we have now a list of eight Amoraim and Tanaim. Let's do this quickly. Rav Huna, Rav, Rabbi Chia, Rabbi Yanai, Rabbi, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, Rabbi Meir, and Rabbi Akiva. Okay. Those. Huh? What? That's. It's. I mean, it's a. I don't know. That's a.
This is a very important principle.
Agreed. No, it's a big issue. Okay, and we have over here the eight Amoraim and Tanaim who say that Adam Akhtan Davashal Abalolam. Good. Rav Nachman Yitzchak lines them up. And the reason why the Gemara brought it in over here is just to tell us that Rav Nachman Yitzchak obviously does not learn that Mishnah Nedarim like Reish Lakish did or like Rav Yochanan did earlier. And therefore, going all the way back to the beginning of the discussion, where all this stemmed from was that Mishnah in Kiddushin, is that Mishnah in Kiddushin going to speak to the concept, the idea of whether or not there's a Chalos Kiddushin by a Yevama Lashuk? So from that Mishnah, not clear. Meaning that Mishnah could be going like Rabbi Akiva, although that's debatable. Okay. That ends the topic, and we are now tackling not our next topic, but the following. Somebody asked me this question yesterday. Bami Nehmi Rav Sheshes Eidecha B'Yavama Mahu. Okay, simple question. Let's say we have one witness coming in and saying that your husband died. Okay, and childless. Now, we've already established from the beginning of the perek, meaning going all the way back to where this perek began, that she can remarry based on the testimony of one witness. Okay, that's the starting point for the whole discussion. Can she also do the mitzvah of yibum? Meaning, let's say that the circumstances are such where the husband in question died childless, and there's a surviving brother. So can she do yibum based on the testimony of one witness? The question you have to ask yourself is, why would it be any different? If she can marry another man, so she couldn't, right? She couldn't do the mitzvah of Yibum. So that's the question. And why would it be different? So let's see the Gemara inside, as the Gemara is going to make a suggestion in terms of why it may be different. This really cuts into one of the core issues of this discussion. Why are we believing one witness? Like we've already mentioned at the beginning of the parak, and it's the theme that comes up again and again throughout this parak. Meaning we are going to give credibility to one witness where normally in halacha we don't. In order to arrive at a point of there has been a change of status, you need two witnesses. Two witnesses are going to create a reality, and one witness generally doesn't. And here there is credibility given to one witness. Why? Is it because this is something midi David Ligluye? Because what's the husband testifying? Oh, I'm sorry, wasn't the husband. What's the one witness testifying? He's saying that your husband's dead. Okay. He's really going out on a limb. Because If he's not dead, this one witness will be proven wrong later on. Meaning the fact of the matter is that he's given extra credibility, more so than in general, because this is something which eventually will be either proven or disproven.
Is he put under oath?
It's just testimony. It's regular under oath, meaning it's testimony. He's saying it in front of a beis din. It amplifies his credibility by the fact that at a later point in time it will be discovered whether or not he's telling the truth or not. So is that it? Meaning, is the reason why we believe one witness by Eidus Isha is because that Eid Echad is like a super Eid? Because of this, because we're going to find out whether he's telling the truth or not. And then if that's true, so then what difference would it make whether we're talking about her ability to marry another man or her ability to do Yibum? It should be the same. Odilma, the Gemara says, or perhaps no. Taima de Eidecha Mishum de Ihi Daike Uminstava. Maybe her ability to remarry is not just the testimony of the one witness, but it's also on her. Meaning that after she receives a report from one witness that her husband's dead, she herself is going to do an investigation, and with her investigation, then and only then, she's going to go ahead and marry. Like we said at the beginning of the parak, but we'll say it again. Meaning the onus, the burden of proof is really placed on her shoulders. And it's pretty evident from the Mishnah that the burden of proof is placed on her shoulders. How is it evident from the Mishnah? Because look what happens when her husband comes back. If and when her husband to come back, meaning it shouldn't, but if it does, so think of the penalties that the Mishnah described that she's going to have to suffer. In fact, the point that I just raised, it's not my point, it's Tosus's point. Tosus is bothered by the fact that I don't even understand what the Gemara is asking right now. The Gemara is wondering, why do we believe Eid Echad? Is Eid Echad believed because he's like a super Eid? In other words, his credibility is amplified because it's something which will be discovered later on? Or is it because the onus and the burden of responsibility of determining whether her husband is dead is a function of her investigation? Tosos says, you see the Tosos inside? So, the Im Tomar, Tosos Eidecha Bivam Amahu Detem Eid Eidecha Vechulei. The Im Tomar, Maikami Bailahu. Havada Taima De Eid Echad Mishum De Daiku Minsavahu. Kedemucha Achlael. Tosos says, I don't even understand. It's clearly because of her, meaning we're allowing her to remarry, not because of the witness, but because of her. And Tosos says, think about what the Mishnah is going to unleash upon her. The Mishnah, the Chachamim are going to unleash upon her if in fact she's wrong. Clearly the burden of responsibility is on her. So the Tosfos says, Ve'omari demi bayi lahu had the samchina adiyuka dida mishum de avida li gluyehu v'hai de avida li gluyehu ikar atam olahachi yesh lismok adiyuka zuta ki hacha delo diyuka kulehai mishum de merach melei. Tosfos basically just polishing the question of the Gemara over here, it comes out to the same point, but basically Tosfos says, look, obviously she needs to do an investigation. But that's clear. And if she doesn't do an investigation, again, we all know what the consequences are for her. But Tosfos says, but that may not be the mechanism in terms of what allows her to remarry. Again, the question of the Gemara is the mechanism the amplification of the witness, or is the mechanism her investigation? Now going back to our topic, let's go back to the Gemara. Let's see the Gemara, how that would affect, just one second, how that would affect in the case of Yibum. So the Gemara says, Mahu taima de eidecha mishum de milsa davida lugluye la mishakir v'acha nami la mishakir odilma taima de eidecha mishum de idaika minstava v'acha. And over here, kevan de zimnin de racham alei lo daika minstava. Over here, look, it's her brother-in-law. She's known him for a while, right? Throughout her marriage, right? There's her husband and there's her husband's brother. Okay, she's known him for a while. Maybe over here, you know, she likes him. She, in other words, she's known him for a while. She likes him. You know what? One witness says that my husband's dead.
Good enough.
Okay, that's good. You know, I'll miss him. But, you know, my luck.
Maybe. No, but the facts still stand there, meaning that she may elect the brother-in-law, but if the husband shows up, she's going to erase the...
That's not... I understood. Yeah, that, but we're not at that point. We're at the point of, would the Chachamim allow her to remarry based on the testimony of one witness? What is that mechanism in which allows her to remarry? Is it the amplification of that one witness, or is it really her investigative is it her investigation? And the Gemara says, and if we can construct a scenario in which she is not motivated to investigate, like the case of Yibum, maybe, says the Gemara, so then maybe no. Maybe we wouldn't even allow her to do Yibum altogether. That's the Gemara's question.
Didn't we learn at the beginning of that the whole unfortunate situation of the rabbis?
That is, like I said earlier, it's good, but like I said earlier, that's not the how, that's the why. Meaning, why did the Chachamim allow this? The reason why is because, in a case, because of Aguna. But that's not the mechanics. That's not the under the hood. That's just telling us why the Chachamim looked for a mechanism in which to allow her to remarry, because of an Aguna. But now we're getting to the how. This is mechanics. This is like we open up the hood and we look at what's ticking underneath. What is actually allowing her to remarry? The testimony of the 1A or her investigative ability? And the Gemara says that if we can think of a scenario where she's not motivated to investigate, maybe we wouldn't allow her to get married at all. That's the question. That's the question of Rav Sheshes. The Gemara says, Amalu Rav Sheshes Tenisua. So the Gemara says, Rav Sheshes says, as far as I'm concerned, I know the answer. Let's look at our Mishnah. Mishnah we saw together yesterday. Amrullah meis benech v'achakach meis balech. Again, the report was that first your son died, and then your husband died. V'nisyav ma. And what does she do? The Mishnah says, she did yibum. V'achakach amrullah chiluf advarim. And then afterwards, again, the Mishnah's a tragedy. And then afterwards, they said, no, it was just the opposite. Teitzev avlad risham achar and mamzer. So she has to get a divorce, and the child is going to be a mamzer. Okay. But just let's look beyond the tragedy. What was when given the report that first your son died, then your husband died, so what did she do? She did Yibum. Now, the question which is the nagging question of the Perek, when it says that she got a report, who did she get a report from? Right? How many witnesses came and told her that this is what happened? So Hechidami, it's the nagging question of the Perek. Ile Maturitre, again, and I know, right, a number of you made this point to me earlier, and it's a good point, that the language of the mission is Amrulo, right? They said to her. Makes it sound like it's two, but again, go back to the first Mishnah. The first Mishnah also was an Amru. And yet the Gemara was absolutely bent on the idea that there was just one witness. I mean, the whole Perek is based on the fact that it was one witness. So the Gemara says, if we're talking about Trey, if we're talking about it's two and two, my chaz is a smoch tahani, smoch tahani. So the Gemara says, why rely on one set of witnesses, rely on the other set of witnesses? So, now by the way, I am going to go through this quickly, but that suggestion of the Gemara of, well, if it's two against two, why rely on one, rely on the other? Tosus points this out. If it's two and two, what happens when you have two conflicting witnesses? Right? They generally speaking, they cancel each other out. And then, just give me a moment, and then what happens then when you have two canceling witnesses? What then is left? And then Tosus says, very good. And Tosus says, go back to her chazaka. What's her chazaka? She's a married woman. So the Gemara suggestion over here, I'm
before or after?
Chazaka of what life was before the witnesses came.
Before the first witness.
In other words, two sets of witnesses are canceling each other out.
Right.
And then go back to the chazaka. So again, so Tosus points this out. So, but still, the Gemara right now, just gonna march on and just get to the Gemara's point, but understood. Just acknowledging that the Gemara's suggestion over here, why rely on one set of witnesses, rely on the other set of witnesses, the old mamzer, and not only that, but in the case where there are two witnesses and they are conflicting with one another, what did the Mishnah say? That child is a mamzer. You have two sets of witnesses saying that the husband died, and you're going to call the child a mamzer? Suffolk mamzer who? Meaning you want to call into question the validity of the child, but you're going to call the child an absolute mamzer if two sets of witnesses, if a set of witnesses say that the husband is actually dead? V'chitem alo dak, and maybe the Mishnah, when the Mishnah uses the term mamzer, it doesn't mean mamzer in the absolute sense. Maybe mamzer over here means suffolk mamzer. V'hamid diktani seif arisha mamzer v'achronin mamzer sh'mamina. Dafka Kitani. No, the Mishnah was not speaking in vague terms. The Mishnah, look what the Mishnah did. In that case he's a mamzer, in that case he's not a mamzer. The Mishnah was being very specific. So, Allah, Shema Minachad. So, the Gemara says, must be that The first report was given to her by one witness. And that's exactly the point Rav Sheshis wants to make, is that the first report is given to one witness, and the time of the and the only reason why they have a problem is because the second set of witnesses came. Halav Hachi Meheman. But what the Mishnah was fine with is that when one witness came and said that her husband, that first the child died, then the husband died, what did the Mishnah allow her to do? Yibum. Okay, so from that alone, it's pretty clear from the Mishnah that Yibum is allowed even on the basis of one witness. Which, again, if you go back to the core question the Gemara was asking, on what basis is she allowed to remarry? Is it her investigation? Or is it that the edus of one is amplified? Sounds like from the Gemara that it's really the amplification of the edus, of that one aid. The Gemara has another version of how Rav Sheshis responded to the question. He responded to the question by saying that truth of the matter is that when she herself can, on the basis of her own testimony, can allow herself to get married. Ha'isha shamra meis ba'ali tinasei, meis ba'ali tisyabeim. She comes back from a long trip. She says the following to the Beis Din: my husband died. So on her own testimony, as we'll see later on in the parak, not this parak, later, on her own testimony, she's allowed to remarry, or she's allowed to do yibum. So, and the Gemara says, look, if she can be the one allowing herself to remarry or do yibum, one witness for sure could. Kiti bayalach lemishra yivam la'amo. The question in hand over here, says the Gemara, this is again the second version, is whether she can do yibum on the basis of one witness. Don't even ask. Of course she could. The question on the table is, Yevama Lashuk. On the basis of one witness saying that her husband's dead, can she now, and again, no children, and she has a, and there's a surviving brother. Can she, not her husband, but on her ability to marry somebody else. Kitibayach Lamishra Yivamalama. My Tam Deidechan, Misham de Milsa David Alugluy Lamashakir. Hachaname Lamashakir. Again, the core question is it A, the amplification of this one witness? Odilma Tam Deidecha Misham de Idaiku Mitzvah. Or maybe she'll be motivated to investigate. The Halo Daiku Mitzvah de Misne Hu Disanyale. On the other hand, over here, she's not going to be motivated because she knows her brother-in-law and she hates her brother-in-law. Now, I know the Gemara earlier talked about her love for her brother-in-law, but again, in other words, the point the Gemara is making is this is not an unknown to her. The brother-in-law is somebody she knows, and she'll either love him or she'll hate him, which may compromise her investigation of the matter. So Rav Sheshis says, I know the answer. It's based on the Mishnah. Amr la meis balech v'achar kach meis benech v'niseis v'achar kach amr la chilav hayodvarim teitzav avlad rishav v'achar mamzer. So again, we go back to the same Mishnah, and in this Mishnah, what was the order given? First your husband died, then your son died. And what's that one witness saying? And again, I gave away the answer. But what's that one witness saying? There's no Zika. There was a child. So the Gemara says, The Gemara says, again, why rely on two over two? And why does the Mishnah say mamzer when it's only a suffix mamzer? And again, the Mishnah wasn't speaking in loose terminology. It's one witness. So the Gemara says, what do you see over here? That it's one witness, and based on the testimony of one witness, she, as a Yavama, can go and marry somebody outside of her brother-in-law. And it's again, the Gemara's answer is, it's the amplification of that one witness. Good. The Gemara just ended today with this. For Olam Trey Utrey, the Gemara says, no, maybe we could suggest that really it's two against two. Two against two? Are you really going to believe two over another two? Gemara says, in one circumstance in halacha, I believe two over another two, and that, of course, is by Adam Zomimim. And Adam Zomimim, Chiddush HaTorah, I believe two over two. If think about what we're saying in the Mishnah. It's really an Okimta. It's a forced pshat in the Mishnah, but again, just to deflect the proof, it could be that the Mishnah is talking about two on top of another two, and we believe the second set because it's an Adam Zomimim scenario.
If The Yevamah hates the brother-in-law, can't you?
Well, I'll ask after.
No.